This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. It's back to school time for many K-12 schools in the Cooley region. As students and families prepare for the start of classes, area districts are making sure they have the staff and resources for another year. Today, we're talking with leaders from two school districts about funding for public schools and the availability of teachers to meet their hiring needs. Joining us in studio are Aaron Engel, District Administrator for Gale Ettrick Chempelo Schools, and Mark White, Human Resources Director for the La Crosse School District. You know, we also reached out to the district administrator for Toma Schools, and when we heard back, you know, she said that in talking about teacher hiring this summer, that the days of having 50 to 100 applicants for a job are gone, that they're happy if they get 10 applicants from which to select, which is a pretty stark difference. So I wonder, Aaron, if that has also been your experience with GET schools.
It has been the same experience. We used to see much higher numbers before I joined Gale Ettrick Chempelo. I remember one teacher talking about how for the fifth grade position that they applied for, there were 200 candidates. And now 10 would be a good number, and we'd be very happy with that. At the same time, we have seen a little bit more movement between school districts, and so I would say that sometimes the level of experience is higher than we've seen in the recent past. So that's been a trade-off.
Mark, what has been your experience with the number of applicants applying for open teaching positions?
Well, I've been in the district as a principal for about 25, 26 years, and then the last 3 years in this role. So I have seen it over a long period of time, and definitely the number of applicants are down compared to what it had been. But that mirrors the number of candidates who are going into the teacher field in general, which most of the universities are reporting is down about a third over the last 10 years or so. We definitely see all of that in the applications. For us, being a little bit bigger district, we sometimes do see more applicants than maybe some of the smaller districts might. That number of 10 would be pretty average in terms of some of our positions, maybe perhaps at the high school and some of those areas, and we'd actually would see less in some special education fields and those kind of things. 10 might be a high number. But when we get into more of a general education area, like a sixth grade teacher or a fourth grade teacher or a kindergarten teacher, we might see a greater number in our district, maybe 40, even 50 applicants, perhaps for some positions, which is still a pretty high number. But it pales in comparison to what we used to get, you know, years ago when Aaron's number was absolutely right on. You know, we definitely would have more. But we're happy with the quality of the candidates that we're getting. We've hired some great people. In the school district of La Crosse, being a little bit bigger hub in the area, we find that of our approximately 50 new teachers on an average year, and that's what this year will be, very average, about 60% come to us with experience, not all from local districts, but many from local districts and statewide, you know, all over the place. And then about 40%, it's their first job right out of college. So it really, I think that experience might be different in more of a rural area where perhaps you might be getting a few more people and a higher percentage perhaps coming right out of school. We are about that 60-40, and we've been there for about the last 5 or 6 years.
You mentioned, you know, about 50 open positions is pretty typical for your school district. And so I wonder if you could talk a little bit about kind of what are the main causes for having open positions? Is it people leaving the district for another position? Is it people retiring, new jobs? You know, kind of what did that look like this year?
Sure. All of those are experience in La Crosse. Typically, when we're in that 45 to 50 higher in the teacher range, about half of that's going to come from retirements. So in a typical year in the district, we're somewhere in that 20 to 30 number in terms of retirements. We have other people who do choose to leave for whatever reason, maybe young in their career and, you know, making different decisions, moving on to other places, or perhaps maybe getting married and relocating, those kind of things. We had a teacher this year relocate to Alaska. So, you know, it just depends what people are doing. And then we do sometimes have where some of our positions that open up are new positions we haven't had in the past. So it's really quite a variety in an average year.
Aaron, about how many positions did GET schools have open this year?
We had 15 this year, which is a little higher than average. It's about 13% of our total teaching workforce, and also for similar reasons as in the La Crosse School District, taking advantage of new opportunities elsewhere, following significant others, retirements are common.
You mentioned that, you know, seeing teachers moving across district is pretty common. I wonder if you can talk a little bit about what that looks like, and, you know, does that create more competition between area school districts when you're all kind of competing for the same, you know, pool of employees?
There's a handful of positions that are really hard to fill, whether they're special education positions at any level or maybe science or technical education. Those teachers have greater opportunities now because of that low number of individuals in the workforce. So if they're unhappy in their current situation, sometimes they have an opportunity to seek opportunities elsewhere, and there's almost always a job for them when they do so. So just the low number of teachers entering into the workforce and our baby boomers retiring has kind of created an opportunity for some low-density teaching positions to move around a little more frequently.
Yeah, Mark, what are your thoughts are on this? When school districts are having compete for a smaller number of candidates, has that created a competition among area school districts, do you think?
Well, I think it certainly has to some extent. UW-Madison did a study a couple of years ago that showed that when teachers move, they don't tend to move long distances in the state of Wisconsin. It tends to be something under 100 miles, maybe sometimes even under 75 miles. And that's what we see. We do attract teachers from other local districts. I think we were kind of the Electric Trempolo this year. I don't think we have anybody that came their way, but Sparta, Tomah, Westsale, very common for us. But then, you know, we have a new teacher from North Dakota this year, too, and a couple from North Carolina that were relocating. We also see that in the La Crosse School District. We do see spouses of employees who are coming here to work at the university or downtown in one of the businesses there, that kind of thing, and they're looking to relocate. So unusually, we have a couple of new staff members, new teachers this year from North Carolina. That doesn't happen very often in this district, but we find that, you know, that's helpful to the district to have teachers who have that experience, have worn off some of the new teacher kinds of things that they need to get developed and understand. They perhaps have their classroom management skills well in place. But we don't go out and recruit from other districts. I think there's a misconception that way, being a larger district. We post all of our openings, but we don't contact necessarily directly employees to say, hey, we're really looking for a special ed teacher. Would you like to come? We hear you're very good and you're in Tomah or Sparta or Cashton or someplace like that. We don't do that. We allow them to come to us. So there's competition, but I wouldn't say that it's an intense competition.
You know, Mark, I wonder if kind of on the reverse of seeing teachers leave a school district for another position, is there a concern that you're losing maybe investment in training or investment in that employee when they choose to leave for another district?
Absolutely. You know, every time that there's cost of replacement, right? And so today we began our new teacher induction program for our almost 50 new teachers. And while there's an economy of scale, depending on how many we have, there's no question between the interviewing process, all the things that we've taught them, the trainings that they've gone through, you know, losing staff members, you know, is a concern. We do keep track of that in the district. We keep track of the percentage of staff that we're replacing due to retirement and those that we're replacing due to other reasons, which we do extensive exit survey of all the employees who are leaving to find out what was the reason that you were leaving and try to remedy any situations that we might see that maybe perhaps need attention. But as Aaron said earlier, too, a lot of it's just it's relocation due to family need or maybe spouse got transferred in their position, somebody going back to school. Those kind of things are really probably more common, but we want to keep on top of it to make sure that it's not lack of job satisfaction.
Aaron, how does your district handle this cost of replacement, as Mark has kind of described it, of having to replace, you know, employees?
We also have an induction program at the beginning of the year. It used to be a half a day. Now it's 2 days, and we're considering 3 or 4 days in the future. All of the trainings that we have implemented throughout the last couple of years, you know, these new employees don't have the benefit of. So trying to ensure that they have the necessary skills to fit into our system is a longer and longer process over time. Additionally, we have a mentorship program, almost every school district does, where you pair them with another teacher so that they're able to learn the basics and have somebody to go to when they have questions. And then we identify skill gaps throughout the year and send them to additional trainings and professional development, whether that's at CESA 4 or another school district or one-on-one, to ensure that they get what they need to be successful.
That's really interesting, talking about expanding that kind of induction time for teachers. Is it just that we are maybe we're requiring more trainings or more of the sort of education for our teachers?
I think a portion of it has to do with the level of knowledge and experience. You need to really be successful on that first day. We have great teacher prep programs in the state of Wisconsin, but they've only student taught for typically a semester in the classroom. And to be really proficient at this job on the first day takes an incredible amount of skill and knowledge. And so every extra day that we can give them before the school year to help, you know, get the little things out of the way, the broad frameworks in place, they're more likely to be more successful. And we've just been much more, and at least in our school district, we've been more intentional about the types of instructional philosophies that we want teachers to use. And so if they're going to have that skill set ready on the first day, we need to make sure that they're aware of that and trained in it. You can't always take what you learned at the last school district, even if they're a veteran, and bring that to the new school district if it doesn't match our educational philosophy in our school district.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about hiring needs and budget needs of local school districts ahead of a new school year. We're here with GET School District Administrator Aaron Engel and Mark White from the La Crosse School District. Mark, you mentioned that we are seeing fewer people entering teacher education programs, people pursuing careers as teachers. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit more about, you know, what you are hearing from area colleges, universities.
We do see that about a third less candidates are making it, so to speak, to the finish line in terms of in their teacher ed programs, or probably in the last 10 years. I think it's a little bit of an after effect of Act 10 and sort of the negative climate in the state directed toward teachers. Aaron and I have participated in panels at UWL with their student teachers in the spring. And yeah, up until maybe a year or two ago, a lot of those teachers that were making that decision to go into, that were going to be graduating, really were doing it at a time when public education was taking quite a bashing statewide. And for them to have made that decision, they really are warriors in a lot of respect in really wanting to do this. I really see that the teachers who have gone into this have gone into it for the right reasons, but there's fewer of them because you really have to say, hey, in spite of what I might have been hearing, you know, as I came out of high school or as in high school, I'm really going to make this decision to go forward. And I just think, as Aaron had said, expectations are higher for teachers than they've ever been. It's not an easy field. It never was, but it really has become a much more demanding profession in many, many regards, more programs, more things that teachers need to be aware of. We just have higher expectations than we've ever had before.
You know, it's so interesting that you bring up Act 10, which was, you know, some 2011 legislation that in part took away collective bargaining rights for certain public employees like teachers. And, you know, I just wonder, Mark, you know, how that, I guess the ripple effects, like even almost 10 years later now, that is still impacting our public education sector. I mean, I feel like, could you talk more about how that's really kind of affected the culture around teaching?
I think it really had a much bigger effect than probably anybody even knew at the time. But I do think that we are making progress in returning more positive stories about what's going on in education. But districts still suffer, and Aaron being a district administrator might be able to be more articulate about that. But in our district, we still suffer from that lack of resource, you know, that came down at that period of time and decisions that we had to make at that time. So it was a difficult time. I think the more space that we put between that, the more positive the atmosphere has become in the state, and certainly, you know, I think educators in the state were certainly behind the election of Governor Evers and see that some positive things that should be happening, we hope, at the state level.
Yeah, Aaron, I know a number of years ago when we were talking about a shortage of teachers in our area that you also brought up Act 10, and I just wonder if you still feel like that is definitely influencing this conversation.
I definitely echo Mark's comments in that it has probably reduced the number of individuals pursuing education just because of that negative atmosphere around education at that time. I think the largest impact still has probably been the hit to the budget that every single, you know, school faced at that same time. The loss of collective bargaining rights for employees was certainly led to negative, you know, attitudes and an atmosphere in our school districts and created animosity where there might not have been as much in the past. I think most school districts have worked through that, at least in my experience. We've developed ways to collaborate with teachers and ensure that working conditions are amenable to all parties. It's certainly the case in Galactic Trumpolo. We have a great relationship with our teachers and work together to ensure that our students are taken care of properly. But I think that hit to the budget, though, was probably the biggest thing. I think it was only maybe last year that if you account for inflation that schools had caught up to that spending that would have happened, you know, in 2011. You know, so that's a huge deficit. As it relates to educational shortages, also, I think a positive development has been that women have more choices and career opportunities than ever in our society. And so whereas in the past, the primary professions women might have chosen were nursing or teaching, more and more of those career paths are open, whether it's engineering or working in healthcare, in different roles. And so I think there's more opportunity. And so where we might have seen more people choosing education because that felt like the best possible opportunity, women have more opportunities than ever and are choosing different things. So I think that's kind of affected the field of candidates as well.
So, you know, how do we, I guess, attract more people to consider a career in teaching? You know, how does, I guess, the education field make that a desirable career?
At our high school, we've got a student teaching club, and I can't remember the exact name of it, but we're encouraging individuals that are interested in teaching to get together early on, have some formative experiences in the classroom, to work with a teacher as a mentor and to learn more about the profession while they're still in high school. We do a great job in education of exposing kids to every career that's out there. And sometimes we forget about the one that's right there, which is education. So I think that's a big part of it, is helping kids see education as a career field while they're in school. So that's one step that we're taking.
Yeah, Mark, I wonder what your thoughts are on how kind of the education industry field, you know, encourages more people to pursue careers there.
Just like Aaron had said, in La Crosse, we're looking at the idea of educator rising clubs and getting established at the high schools to let students know that this is a great career, that there's great opportunities and a great teaching career that they can have. So that, I think that's a big piece of it. And I think the other part is just getting the message out there. You know, for a long time, the only way that we could get the message out about education was really through people like yourselves or the print media and those kind of things. But as print media has sort of declined in the number of people who are participating, social media has become very important. So in our district, we're spending a lot of time trying to encourage our teachers, and then we have a communications director trying to get positive stories out there about the district and going directly out there through various means that we might use. That's something that we would never have thought about 25 years ago. And hopefully those positive stories are out there. But it is something relatively new for education, because I would say up until probably 10 years ago, it really wasn't a big issue. We still had plenty of candidates. At the end of every season, there were a number of new grads who didn't get jobs, who then filled our sub lists, and we had, you know, lots of subs and really not a competitive situation in most regards. But that's changed. You wouldn't think that a third would make that much difference, but it really does. And so everything's affected, from the number of subs that we have to fill in our classrooms and on given days to the number of candidates that we have. But it really is incumbent on us to do that encouraging, to let people know that it is a great career. And I mean, to be able to change the lives of children and really affect the future, I don't know that there's anything that could be more exciting that someone could be doing for a profession and a way to make a difference in this world. And so those are the kind of people and the kind of that were out there. I think we have to let our students know in particular. We've all been students, right? But did we ever really consider it as a possible career?
You know, Mark, I wonder what hiring needs in the La Crosse School District have been when it comes to professional staff. You know, when talking with the Tolma District Administrator, she mentioned a speech language pathologist job that they were struggling to fill. And I just wonder, those sorts of professionals that are in school districts, you know, what demand has been like for those sorts of people?
Yeah, definitely, especially when we're conflicting with maybe the private sector, maybe the hospitals who are also employing physical therapists, occupational therapists, speech and language pathologists, those kind of people where they have positions like that too. That's definitely an issue for us. This year we had speech and language pathologists replace occupational therapists, physical therapists. We have managed to do that. We still have a school psychologist position out there that we're looking to fill. Those are very specialty type areas. Always encourage young people as they're thinking about a career and as they think about teaching. They may love the idea of being a third grade teacher or a second grade teacher, but I always tell them you're going to compete with 30 or 40 or other people for that job. But speech and language, occupational therapy, that kind of thing, less competition for the positions, great jobs working with students, you know, in a smaller group setting. I just don't think that a lot of times students and young people know about those kinds of careers in education, so we really have to make that known. But they're definitely some of our most difficult to fill, along with things like tech ed and family and consumer ed, and just in general special education for us are the ones that we struggle the most with when we have openings.
Aaron, I wonder what your thoughts are on this hiring for, you know, other professional staff outside of teachers in the district.
We've had a similar experience. It's much smaller candidate pools for speech language pathologists. We posted a position this year and had three applicants, two of whom took jobs elsewhere before we were able to offer a job. We were fortunate to hire the last person standing and ended up being our first choice regardless. But it's difficult sometimes. And we have also encouraged students to consider different paths in education because there's some really neat opportunities to work with kids in different ways that's incredibly rewarding. Not only the professional positions, we've also had difficulty hiring our support staff as well. So whether it's bus drivers or food service workers or paraprofessionals, the job market is pretty good out there, and we compete with lots of different positions in that regard. And so hiring in general can be a challenge. I think at this point we're still looking for two people in our transportation department and one person in food service. So hopefully by the first day of school we'll have them on board.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought up, you know, bus drivers specifically, because my colleague in Wausau area has done some reporting on just the shortage of bus drivers in especially rural school districts. You know, and he found that a lot of times those driver positions might be picked up by people like dairy farmers or things, you know, looking for, you know, kind of adding that to an existing job. I wonder if that's also kind of been your experience as well of people in rural areas, maybe even farmers, not being able to take those jobs.
Very similar experience here as well. We have, you know, retired individuals that are looking for some, you know, extra income in their retirement. We have farmers or their spouses, you know, depending on who's the primary worker on that farm, they'll come drive bus as well. But the hours are kind of weird. You know, you got to get up early in the morning and you're at it for a couple hours and then you're done by 8 o'clock and then you've got to turn around and come back at 2:30 and drive the bus again. So it doesn't work with everyone's schedule. So it takes a unique individual who's willing to do that. We own our bus company, and so we're able to, sometimes that's a blessing, sometimes it's a curse, you know, we're able to manage things through, the relationships that we have with people and go out and seek individuals we know that are looking for that kind of work, but every year it's a struggle to ensure that we have the number of bus drivers we need.
Mark, what has been hiring like for, you know, support staff like bus drivers, paraprofessionals in the classroom?
In the school district of La Crosse, we do contract out for our bus service with Go Right Way. So my contact in terms of that is a little bit different, but I do know that they do struggle. And I just drove up past their office today on my way to Logan High School for a meeting. And they've got lots of signs out in the yard, you know, trying to recruit, you know, wage and those kind of things. Buses that you see parked in the city, advertising for that. So just for the reasons that Aaron mentioned. it's a unique kind of position. We see it too for our cooks, and we see it also for our teacher assistants. We pay a pretty good wage rate, but one of the things that we really have struggled in the last probably 7 or 8 years is that it used to be in education you could count on the benefits package being perhaps even better than you might find in the private industry. The wage might not have been quite as strong, but you could always count on excellent benefits. Now you can count on good benefits, but not excellent benefits, because that's one of the ways that districts made the dollar stretch, you know, that they had to make 7 or 8 years ago. So that's a challenge for us. And so in our case, we have a little bit of declining enrollment in the school district and have for a number of years in La Crosse. And so we have to be very careful. So for us, what the benefits can remain, you know, about the same cost, our wage rate can go up a little bit. But if the benefit costs increase a lot, it's really causes our wages to stagnate. And then we're not competing the way that we know we need to in order to attract those people who might be attracted to private industry for similar wage rates, especially when you start talking about cooks and teacher assistants in that area. So benefits are huge for us. So we really work with our employees in terms of the cost of our health care and ways we can keep the cost down. What are the more economical ways? If it's 7 o'clock at night, what's the best way for you to get the medical service that you might need? If it's this, you might do this. If it's this, you might do that. We even offer teledoc services through our health insurance, and that's been helpful for people too. So really keeping those costs down of the benefits in order to keep the wages competitive is important.
That's really interesting, because we see nationally a big conversation right now about teacher salaries and kind of raising salaries, especially in states where they maybe haven't seen salary increases. And so, you know, I wonder if you feel like that kind of balancing between salaries and benefits is taking place, you know, outside of just the school district, La Crosse, if other school districts are also facing those similar challenges.
Sure. When I talk to other human resources directors or superintendents or principals across the state, I think that's a conversation that everybody has. We would all like to pay our employees the most that we possibly can, but we're limited by what we can do by state law, by what the cost of benefits are as they move up. And it's really not just in the state of Wisconsin. It's an issue no matter where you are. We saw protests in West Virginia and Arizona and places like that over the last year where their wage rates were really quite low. So it's that push and pull, you know, and we do try to stay competitive regionally. And I know Aaron was always watching too. We're all trying to see what is everybody paying. But then we also know that we're competing in our case in La Crosse with people like Eau Claire and Wausau, Stevens Point, Appleton, and those places. So we try to benchmark ourselves there to see where we can. But, you know, we're really limited in what the increase can be by what the law allows us to increase, and then by what is our ability to once we take care of the benefits.
What does this conversation look like in a more rural school district like GET, Aaron?
So we're definitely aware of the wages around the region, and I would say every other year we probably share what they are so that, you know, we can get an idea of where folks are at. You know, our goal as a kind of satellite of La Crosse, but still rural, is to, you know, be competitive. We're not going to be able to offer the wages that La Crosse offers. You know, we're a more rural community, and the cost of living is a little different. But many of our teachers live in La Crosse, and so they're commuting to us. And so our goal is to be in that range so that we're competitive with our neighbors. You know, to the north of us, you know, they might pay a little bit less even than we do. But, you know, I would say generally wages for teaching are, you know, pretty good. You're able to have a good solid living, you know, especially if you've got a family that has two earners. You know, it's a nice lifestyle. Many of our teachers do, you know, augment their income by working in the summer, usually often for the school district. You know, we have summer school and other jobs that we need done. And so we have lots of teachers that are with us, you know, it feels like nearly year round. But yeah, we're always aware of the conversation in other school districts, and it's the same thing with benefits as well. Health insurance, we're always looking for ways to encourage appropriate use so that we can keep our increases down, and for ways to modify our plans that are acceptable for everyone.
Aaron, what is all of this kind of boil down to at the student level? You know, how are students impacted by the school districts maybe struggling to fill positions, or, you know, still having positions 2 weeks out from, you know, school starting?
the most important thing that we can do is put a great teacher in front of a kid. It's that, that's, you know, instruction is the number one thing. And I feel confident that, you know, every day during the school year, we're doing a great job with that. I have no doubt there are, you know, moments of trepidation as we lead up to the start of the school year, but we've filled every position every year, and in those, some of those specialist positions where it's taken a little while, we have always found a high quality long-term substitute. We have a lot of recent retirees who maybe can't work, you know, full-time back in their home district because of some laws the state has passed, but they can work for us in a different capacity for a period of time and fill in. And so where we've had like a speech language pathologist, we were unable to fill that for a semester. We had a recent retiree come in and do an amazing job for 3 months. We probably got, you know, one of the most experienced veteran people around to be able to do that job for a short period of time. And it probably made our whole program better as a result. So I think taking advantage of recent retirees and, you know, individuals that are willing to work short term, we've been able to really make up that gap when we do have kind of temporary absences.
Yeah, Mark, what does that mean for the school district if you, you know, still have open teaching positions when the start of the school year rolls around?
We do very well with filling positions in general, and we certainly do much better when we know about them in March, April, or May, those kind of things. Like most districts, starting July 1 of every year, we put in what we call liquidation damages. If you're a teacher and going to break your contract after July 1, we put a little barrier in there to hopefully help people want to stay where they are. If it's before July 1, we have a fighting chance in just about any area. But after July 1, it gets more difficult. And if it's after August 15, then we really have a problem. Unless it's a general area like elementary education or perhaps even middle school, we might be okay. But all districts live in fear of the family consumer ed teacher, the tech ed teacher, the special ed teacher that comes up the sidewalk with a letter in hand on, you know, August 15 or after. That makes it very difficult to do. But we always do manage to figure out what would be the best, what will work the best. Sometimes it means people stepping up. Sometimes it means calling someone who is retired and say, can you help us out during this period of time? Again, being a little bigger, we have the advantage of a little bit bigger population perhaps to draw from. But in general, in most areas, we can find people that are licensed or willing to get licensed and that we think will do well in front of the students. You know, we are really blessed currently, I think, in most districts, and certainly we feel that in our district, with great people applying for positions. It's just a matter of sometimes figuring out where might they fit and what their skills might be. Oftentimes, our principal said, you know, they'll do the interviews for a position. We really have three people. We'd hire any one of these three people, right? And so we're very fortunate yet that the while the number may be lower than it's been, I think the quality's never been higher. I think we've been able to hire great people. I joke with some of our new teachers, you know, it's been a long time since I've been in the classroom, you know, quite a long period of time. But I don't know, you know, they are so skilled in what they do. My teaching paled in comparison to what we're asking them to do now and how they've responded.
Mark White from the La Crosse School District is here with us today to talk about hiring needs of local school districts as area students and staff prepare to head back to school. He's joined by GET School Administrator Aaron Engel. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation on local schools and how the new state budget will impact their funding. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, WPR.org/newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about the needs of local school districts as area students and teachers prepare for a new school year. The new state biennial budget raised K-12 education spending by about $570 million over the next 2 years, including more money in per pupil aid and for special education. So what does the spending increase mean for local schools? Joining us to talk about it are Aaron Engel, District Administrator for Gale Ettrick Trempealeau Schools, and Mark White, Human Resources Director for the La Crosse School District. Aaron, I wonder what your thoughts are on the new state budget and maybe how it will impact funding for your school district.
We're always thankful for an increase in education funding. You can always ask for more, but it was a good biennium, I think, for schools, public schools, to get the funding that we did. For Gale Ettrick Trempealeau, you know, we'll see the per pupil increase, which will be beneficial. It could potentially impact taxes the way the state legislature has decided to fund education the past couple of bienniums. It's generally had the effect of pushing down mill rates. And so this will be a little bit of a change from the past. And, you know, the public should understand that school districts have the authority to, you know, increase taxes as a result. And that's the way the state legislature chose to fund public education in this round in part. And so good for schools to be able to levy that money, but it may impact mill rates a little bit across the state.
Do you have an estimate at this point of how much more GET schools could see or the district could see in general?
Mm-hmm. Through the revenue limit adjustment, it'll be about $250,000 for our 1,400 students. And then there's also a per pupil categorical aid, which will be about half that, about $125,000 that we would see as additional revenues. You know, so that's appreciated and will be put to good use.
Yeah, I wonder, is that going to allow maybe the school district to do something with that funding, make an investment with that funding, or is that really just needed to kind of keep up with the increasing costs of providing kind of the programs that are existing?
Even with that increase, we're still looking at ways to trim our budget and make cuts between kind of the inflationary raise of salaries that we need to continue to offer employees to keep them working for us, as well as the inflation in healthcare insurance. You know, that takes up all of that and more, you know, so just kind of maintaining the status quo and then trying to be as efficient and frugal everywhere else we can. So while it greatly appreciated, it did not expand our educational offerings to any great extent.
Yeah, Mark, I wonder what, you know, this budget means for the La Crosse School District.
So in a very similar manner, the amount of the increase that the district will see is pretty much equal to what the cost of the employee benefits and wage increase will be. You know, we are capped by the Consumer Price Index, urban number that's CPIU, which was 2.44% this year. And so that is what our employees received. And that will pretty much eat up most of everything that we receive in terms of the revenue cap and the adjustments and the per pupil aid, all of those things combined. And being, again, a declining revenue or declining enrollment district, we have to take that into account also. So we're not looking for additional places where we're able to add, but it certainly beats the alternative, you know, which would be that we would have been looking for more areas to cut. Our board took sort of a brave viewpoint this spring in making an assumption that something good was going to happen with the budget and went forward, you know, in the spring at that time with the employees, hoping that that would be the case, knowing that if it wasn't, we would have to make an adjustment for the next year. So we're happy that, you know, it came through in the way that it did, and in the next year even being more favorable with some of the percentage increases in special ed should be very helpful to the district in general. But in our case, and in most districts in the state, over 80% of our budget are the people that we hire. So that's where it can be. And since revenue caps have been in place, 1992, 93, however long that's been now, we really have, in terms of the non-personnel personnel areas, there really isn't a lot of extra there. We used to say, you know, we trimmed the fat from the bone many, many years ago, and now we're into the marrow maybe, you know, when we have to make them in the non-personnel areas. But we pretty much have done what we can there. We haven't seen building budget increases in many years. So we're really very tight in the non-people area. The only way when we have big up and downs that we can really adjust for are the people that we hire and the benefits and wages that we provide for them.
Do you think that perspective is always understood when we're talking about education funding in our state? You know, there was a lot of conversation about, you know, the large increase that education funding was receiving in this budget. And I just don't, you know, with hearing both of your school districts, you know, that's not meaning, you know, more money really to do a lot more. do you feel like that perspective is really included when we're having these conversations?
I think oftentimes not. I don't think people sometimes realize the people-intensive nature of the education business. You know, the amount that we're spending on things like textbooks, although we're certainly spending less on textbooks than we ever did because there's other ways to deliver that instruction. But in terms of what we're spending the money on, it's definitely, you know, people-intensive of kind of business. So I don't know that people always understand that, and I certainly wouldn't want people to think we weren't very happy to receive what we did in this biennium, because it definitely beats what the alternative would have been. Nobody wants to start talking about cutting things like whatever it might be, teaching positions or co-ex positions or cooks or custodians, and not keeping buildings clean, those kinds of things. And so we really work hard, as I think all districts do, to try to keep things on an even a keel as we possibly can.
Aaron, do you think that the investment that we saw in this budget, are you hopeful that maybe we'll continue to see lawmakers looking at education spending?
I hope that continues to be a trend. I know Governor Evers, having been the former state superintendent, obviously has an education focus, and so I anticipate that the next biennium will have that focus as well. I think the state clearly supports education. I think we saw that in the last set of elections. I think we saw that in the state biennium development. You know, there was a lot of support for public education. As long as that continues, we'll be able to continue to do, you know, new and novel things and keep innovating and, delivering the best possible education for our students.
I know one area that we did see some new money in this budget was in special education funding. And Aaron, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about kind of what special education funding looks like in your district and, if this increase will help.
It definitely will help over time. Initially in the first year, it's a pretty small adjustment, but in the second year, it's a slightly larger adjustment. The effect of the change in special education funding is it leaves more money for general purposes, so to speak, for all of our students. We're required to transfer money from Fund 10 to the Special Education Fund every year, to offset those costs. That transfer for us ranges between 12% and 15%, depending on the year. So that's a large proportion of our budget that goes to help students who often need it the most. So we're more than happy to spend those dollars and make that investment in those students. At the same time, it's nice that the state is able to help offset those costs, because sometimes they're prohibitively large. You know, we have students that are, maybe medically fragile or have significant cognitive issues, and so they need a lot of extra support beyond what the state might generally give us. And so by increasing the reimbursement for those costs, it goes a long way to ensuring that all of our students get everything that they need each year. Hopefully in the next biennium, they continue to make this adjustment to move it where it was. I think in the 80s when they started this program, you know, the reimbursement rate was at something like 70%, and now we were down to 26% this last year. It'll be up to, I think, or 25% this last year, 26% this next year, and then 30%. So slowly creeping back up. But that investment helps all students, not just students in special education.
Yeah, Mark, I know that the La Crosse School District, this is something that you guys have been looking at, special education funding, and so I wonder what your thoughts are on this increase that we see, if it will help at all.
No question. It's amazing when we bring all 1,000 employees together in the district on the first day, on the 29th next week, and then we look at how many of those 1,000 employees are engaged in some way in working with our special education program, and it's a huge number, and money we're happy to spend because it's important that we do so. But as Aaron said, the more reimbursement that there is in special education and doing the right things there will free up some money in the general ed population and dollars that we've been funneling into special ed. One of the things that would really help, the state has on the right trajectory now, but the federal government is not, in terms of special education reimbursement. And this was a federal law, but the federal government has really shirked their responsibilities, in my opinion, in this area. And so we continue to fight that fight too, that if we could have more of the funding done at the federal level, there'd be less pressure on the states to do that. Because when it gets down to the local level, you're going to do the right thing. You're going to hire the teachers, you're going to hire the assistants that you need to fund that program, to do the right things for students no matter what. So then it's just a matter of where does it come from. But it's good to see the state moving. Now we'd like to see the federal government moving a little bit too.
Aaron, when we talk about special education, what are the biggest cost drivers in that area? Is it staff time? Is it equipment or technology needed to serve those students? What are the biggest cost drivers?
Just like with the rest of education, it's staffing, salary and benefits for those people that work with them on a regular basis. Some of our students have, high needs and need a smaller student-to-teacher ratio in order to be successful, and we ensure that we provide that. As a result, you might have, a teacher with a caseload of 15 to 20 students, and that's time intensive, that they're supporting across the school. There are other smaller things that can be costly as well. Sometimes special transportation can add to that budget. And then sometimes we have students who need very specialized programs, that can be prohibitively expensive. $100,000 a year for some, that we're committed to providing that student the best possible education, and that program is what it takes. And when that's the case, you bear that cost gladly. At the same time, you've got to figure out how to pay for that. And the more reimbursement there is for a special education, the less, making that right choice will impact everyone else. So that's a very positive thing as we add to special education reimbursement.
That's GET School District Administrator Aaron Engel here with us today to talk about the needs of local school districts as students and teachers head back to school. He's joined by Mark White from the La Crosse School District. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Funding for mental health services is also something that we've seen area schools talking about. Mark, and I wonder if you could talk a little bit about what sort of mental health services maybe the La Crosse School District has invested in and where funding comes from for those services.
Well, we have a whole raft of school social workers and guidance counselors, just like, all other districts do and those kinds of things. We do work with the community, too, we have some of the counselors and people who work with some of our students are actually coming into the schools, setting up shop on a limited basis in some of the buildings to help provide services there. And then we're one of three districts in the state this year to be able to tap into what's called a Project Aware grant, and we're just getting that off the ground to, again, try to bring some more mental health services to our students and work directly with students who might be the most in need, especially at the secondary level. So it's something that we're always looking for. What are some grant-funded opportunities? What's out there that might be available at the state level? And, of course, we heard some positive conversation at the state level about grants and different funding that might be available. But it's certainly something that we all recognize is something that we really want to be doing more of in whatever ways that we can and try to be as creative about it as we can.
Yeah, Aaron, I wonder from your perspective, has the need for mental health services in schools, is that growing or, is there maybe just increased awareness about that need?
I think a large part of it is probably increased awareness and then also some of the changing societal dynamics, I think, probably impact that a little bit. But I think we're doing more than we ever have. I think the expectations of schools are different than they ever have. When I talk to superintendents who've been in the business for 30 years or those that have retired, their obligations towards students were much different from the public than they are today. And that's all a beneficial thing, I think, for our students. So we're trying to do more than we ever have, with our limited budgets. This 2 years ago, we were able to hire a school social worker for the first time, and part of the state funding did help offset some of that cost. As a smaller school district, to help make that work financially, we partnered with the county, and they purchased some of our school social workers' time to do some of their services, which has been a really positive collaboration. As a result, our school social worker kind of knows how the county does their operations, and then they're also aware of what happens in our school district. And so it's really been a good collaboration to be able to provide a really nice service for kids.
This idea of schools being asked to do more and provide more services to students. Aaron, I wonder if there is a feeling that in rural districts especially, maybe that need is greater because they don't maybe have those services outside of a school district, that there are fewer healthcare providers or, et cetera.
I think that is a sentiment by some. I think the nature of the needs are simply different, whether it's urban or rural. You know, while there may be fewer resources available in a rural community, you know, that are available for students or the residents, in an urban setting, there might be more needs than there are facilities available, you know. So it's really, you know, two sides of the same coin. I don't know that it's vastly different. I think sometimes the distance can be an issue. You know, when the county seat is in your community, it's a little easier to get to some of those resources. Whereas if you're on the, you know, south end of Trumbull, it might be a 45-minute drive. And if transportation's an issue and there isn't public transportation, you know, that can be a barrier that may not exist in an urban setting that has public transportation available to it. But it doesn't take much of a distance from the city center to create that transportation barrier. So I think there's definitely some unique challenges in rural education, but I would say we probably face similar challenges, whether it's urban or rural.
GET School District Administrator Aaron Engel and Mark White, Human Resources Director for the La Crosse School District, joined us to talk about funding needs of local school districts as students and teachers head back to school. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers.